Morning, Your Honor. Deanna Dotson on behalf of Appellant Mr. Alan Kimball.
Ms. Dotson?
This morning, I'd like to talk about, I think...
Yeah, we only have a sentencing appeal here. We're not appealing the conviction.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the main thing on the sentencing, I think we have to look at, was the guideline correct? And in order to look at that, we need to go back and see what this sentencing guideline that was relied on by the court, how did they determine that? And what the cases, particularly I'm going back to Booker, which really is going along the lines of Apprendi and Blakely, in that the guideline, and Booker, in Stevens and Booker calls this the defined range, is talking about that has to be found by whatever is found by the jury or admitted by a defendant in a guilty plea. So those facts determine this guideline range, or defined range, as Stevens says, or it's called a standard range.
Tell me if I'm wrong about this, but doesn't Booker say as long as it's within the guidelines, you don't get to a jury?
It says if the sentence is selected within this specific defined range, and I think that's a key.
How's that different from the guidelines?
Well, it is the guidelines, but how do you determine where in this guideline? Where do you pick mm-hmm. this defined range? Where do you pick the appropriate guideline range? Mm-hmm. And Booker is saying that, again, what Apprendi said, it's based on the facts that were found by a jury or admitted by a defendant. That sets this range.
Okay, now there's no Apprendi issue here because the sentence was well within the maximum, right?
No, you're wrong, Your Honor. It was not within the maximum, and that's one of the arguments, is that what is...
It was not within the statutory maximum?
Correct, Your Honor. Because that's another question, is what is the statutory maximum? That hasn't been determined. The statutory maximum, according to Apprendi, is that, again, it's any fact that has been admitted by a defendant or found by a jury beyond reasonable doubt. That sets the maximum. This defined range, this upper limit of the defined range or guideline range, that's the statutory maximum. Blakely clarified that in saying that for statutory maximum for Apprendi purposes is the maximum sentence a judge may impose solely on the facts reflected in the jury verdict or admitted by the defendant. It goes on to say in Blakely that the top of that range, based on that information, was 53 months, not the 10 years that was statutory.
What case do you depend on for the proposition that the 53 months is the statutory maximum?
I'm not saying that's in my case. I'm saying that's what Blakely said. When Blakely was saying what was a statutory maximum, it's not the statute.
So you get
by
that from Blakely. So you get that from Blakely.
Yes, it's from Blakely, who is actually quoting, talking about Apprendi. But Blakely is saying specifically that the statutory maximum for sentencing purposes is the top of the range.
No. But wait a minute. But the difference is that's under a mandatory guideline system, right?
No, it's not, Your Honor, because under Booker, under the constitutional Booker part...
No, but that's the whole point of Booker. Booker says if the guideline is only advisory and not mandatory, obviously then it's not controlling, right?
What's not controlling?
The guidelines. The guideline calculation is not controlling. The guideline says 53 months or whatever it says. That's not mandatory, so it's not controlling under Booker.
No, what's not controlling is the fact that the judge now has a discretion, but the judge still must find this guideline range.
That's only as a matter of, you know, a judicial procedure. It's not because, it's a statutory requirement that... you can only sentence within that range.
No, it's a constitutional requirement, Your Honor, because...
It is not. Now, what case says that's a constitutional requirement?
Booker, in the constitutional
Booker
part
doesn't
of Booker,
say that.
Stevens says, any fact other than a prior conviction which is necessary to support a sentence exceeding the maximum authorized by a guilty plea or jury verdict must be admitted by the defendant or proven beyond reasonable doubt. So this is our Sixth Amendment.
Right, and if the guideline is not mandatory, what the guilty plea authorizes is a statutory maximum.
Correct. The guilty plea authorizes a statutory maximum, okay?
Right.
That's the maximum of the guideline range that would be determined based on that guilty plea.
No.
I'm talking about the statute. No, not the guideline.
The statute says for bank robbery, a maximum sentence is 20 years.
With due respect, actually, I think it says 40 years.
Or whatever it is.
Well, but that's not what the case law is saying, Your Honor, because
I think you and I read the case law differently.
Right, because Blakely is saying, is explaining the statutory maximum, and that's what is so important in all these sentencing.
No, but Blakely is based on the premise that that guideline system is mandatory, that the judge is required by law to follow it.
Well,
that's what.
But this same quote from Blakely is also stated in Cunningham, which is after the advisory.
Cunningham dealt with the California system, which was also mandatory at that time.
But they're still talking about a guideline range. So,
counsel, with due respect, I think that your understanding of the case law might be a little outdated. Because, as Judge Tashima is indicating here, because we no longer have a mandatory structure, what you're quoting from in Booker is really not the issue here. We're dealing with the discretion of the judge after looking at the statutory maximum to go up or down on a discretionary basis within the guidelines. And in this case, 28 U.S.C. 84B1B8, as for counts 1 and 2, was 40 years, and the statutory maximum for count 3 through 6 was life, based upon 21 U.S.C. 841B1A8. So that's what we're really talking about here, not Booker pre the change from mandatory to discretionary application of the guidelines.
But then where does the Sixth Amendment come in then?
Well, the Supreme Court has determined that as long as the guidelines are not mandatory, as Judge Tashima indicated, the Sixth Amendment is not violated.
Well, that's not, because Justice Breyer, at the end of his decision on the remedial part of Booker, which made it advisory, he says both parts of Booker must be applied. Both the Sixth Amendment holding and the remedial interpretation. The Sixth Amendment holding in Booker says that any fact that is going to raise this maximum, and again, I'm going back to what Apprendi is saying on the statutory maximum, is not the statute, whether it's mandatory or advisory, that's still the language that sets this guideline range. So,
before your time runs out, counsel, do you want to comment on the differential between the 160 grams that he pleaded to versus the 362.2 that was mentioned in the PSR?
Correct, Your Honor, because, and that's in the double jeopardy argument, is he pled guilty and the court accepted that guilty plea for 160 grams. He disputed the government's proffer of the 362 grams and that it was actual methamphetamine. Then, after the plea was accepted, then, during sentencing, is when the government then puts on evidence that brings up this additional number of grams.
Right. Now, the government was not barred from doing that, was it, in terms of the sentencing itself?
Well, I guess the way I'm looking at it, in an advisory, the judge has a discretion. However, I'm saying that the maximum of this defined range, the top of the guideline, is the statutory maximum. The judge has discretion to go anywhere in between here, but they cannot go above that.
Yeah, but you're not responding to Judge O'Scanlan's question about double jeopardy. And while you're responding to that, I would simply ask you what your response is to Witt versus the United States, which I think makes pretty clear that there is no double jeopardy here.
Well, but again, Your Honor, there is double jeopardy because then during sentencing, after the guilty plea has been accepted, now the government is like putting on another trial, putting on more evidence. That should have been brought forth before the guilty plea was accepted, before those facts were determined. And I believe even in, it says a double jeopardy clause bars the government from later proving an Apprendi fact, which fact that raises this guideline range, the statutory maximum, which I'm saying is the top of the guideline range, which has been determined by the Apprendi rule, that a fact that enhances a sentence above the statutory maximum and it's not proven in the original prosecution is a form of double jeopardy.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. We'll hear from the government now.
Good morning. May it please the court, Marshall Silverberg on behalf of the United States. Does the court want me to address at all the Booker issue? Because it seems pretty clear to me that the guidelines are advisory. The Supreme Court decided that once the guidelines were advisory, there were no Sixth Amendment implications anymore. This court in Ameline, Ingham, Dare, Statham, a whole series of cases that came down after Booker said that the correct procedure is for the district court to make the decision as to the amount of drugs, and that the government only has to do that by a preponderance of evidence. In this case, the court did it by clear and convincing evidence, and I believe there's really no issue there.
When you say clear and convincing, that is your conclusion as to the quality of the findings. Is that right? There was no...
No, the judge specifically said clear and convincing.
That he was making these findings because to him, the evidence was clear and convincing.
First, it's two different judges here. Initially...
Oh, Judge Gilmour, I'm sorry.
Judge Gilmour, yeah. Right. And Judge Gilmour, who became the sentencing judge after the initial remand, she specifically made findings by clear and convincing evidence of the drug amount, of the two levels for the gun, for the four levels for the role of the offense, for the two levels for the obstruction. Each one of those findings were made by clear and convincing evidence.
So now, what's your standard of review with respect to that?
I believe once she made the findings by clear and convincing evidence, then I think, and each one of those was a factual finding, the standard of review is by clear error by this court. And it's a factual finding, and the facts are, you know, well within the record. It supports each one of the findings. In fact, Judge Mulway made the same findings. The guidelines range was calculated the same way by two different district judges after, I think, 11 days of hearings. I mean, the way I look at this case is that this is exactly what I think the Supreme Court wanted to see happen after Booker. In the first case, the first time it was sentenced, there was a mandatory guideline scheme. The offense level was 42, the sentencing range was 30 years to life. The judge had to impose the 30 years unless she felt that a downward departure was appropriate. Then after the remand, Booker was decided. There's a new judge reviewing the same transcripts, and she made the same calculations, but instead of sentencing the defendant to 30 years, she sentenced him to 25 years based upon an application of the 3553A factors. So I submit that's exactly what the Supreme Court was trying to achieve in its ruling in Booker and in the prior rulings, to give the district courts that type of discretion, that they would not be bound by the guideline range, and the guideline ranges would just become advisory.
Well, as I read her briefs, counsel is suggesting that a lesser standard was applied here than is required. She's saying it was only preponderance, whereas it should have been clear and convincing, and somehow or other is asking us to make our determination as to whether the record justifies that it was clear and convincing. Have I stated her argument accurately?
I don't think so. I don't think she's saying that, because it's clear from the supplemental excerpts of record, the court's decision on page 36, and on page 37, and then again on page 42, and the court's, you know, each time says, and here on page 42, quoting the court, "Well, I've been reviewing my holdings this morning, and while it's not necessary for the court to make a clear and convincing standard finding, the evidence in this case is extremely strong, and there is definitely ability to find by preponderance, and I find, because of the nature of the evidence, that it also reaches the standard of clear and convincing with respect to the findings that I did make, and I had made a note that I wanted to make sure that there is clarity in the record with respect to that."
But you're asking us, obviously, to affirm. What do we need to determine in order to affirm? That, yes, it was preponderance, or yes, it was clear and convincing?
Well, I think it doesn't matter. I mean, the court can make that decision either way, but even assuming clear and convincing, which I think there is a basis for finding, given the increased total number of increasing levels, there was, you know, sufficient. I don't think this is the case where the court needs to say, well, the district court erred in finding only by a preponderance because of the extensive increase in the sentencing range.
Okay.
Here, the court made the findings by clear and convincing, so it seems to me any finding saying that the court only had to find by preponderance would almost be dicta. I mean, that's not what happened in the court below.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
The case just argued will be submitted for decision, and we will hear argument next in United States versus Drake.